Delighted tonight to be joined by somebody I know very well, so this feels like a really comfortable interview for me, and hopefully some of that rubs off on them, as I'm sure they're a little bit nervous sharing this side of their story. But I'm delighted to be joined by Kiara Lionel Salim, who I know from our psoriasis advocacy, but will be here tonight to talk about their experience with transverse myelitis and just generally being an awesome chronic illness warrior. Welcome in, Kiara. I hope you're well.
Hi, Joel. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for having me. And I'm very excited. Also nervous to share about my story.
I must admit, I've heard you share your psoriasis story so many times. It was in the, while we were chatting off air, I've seen a different side of you sharing this side. So I'm really interested to hear that. And not the sort of, you know, we share our story so many times, don't we? So it's great to hear another angle. But thank you for joining us, guys. We're really privileged to have somebody like Kiara join us. I recently watched her speak in Singapore. I've seen her speak elsewhere. We've done projects together. And yeah, just you share your story beautifully, and I'm really looking forward to hearing it. And I hope this isn't going to be too much of an emotional sort of toll on you, because I appreciate you've shared a lot the last couple of weeks, as we all have a little bit.
Apologies in advance if I make anyone cry tonight.
That's fine. Emotional connections are good, Kiara. It means we're doing something right if we're sharing those experiences, because, you know, ultimately that's your truth, that's your experience. And you know, if we make an emotional connection, we've got more of a chance of like tackling stigma and helping raise people's awareness and all of those things. So I suppose before we get into the specifics with your story tonight, for anyone that doesn't know you like I do, and for anyone that wasn't with us on previous streams for like World Psoriasis Day when you kindly joined us, do you want to maybe give us a bit of background about who you are, where you're from, and also I should have said in the introduction, I'm very grateful for you doing this in your second language. So yeah, thank you. Just maybe tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, so hi everyone, my name is Kiara Lionel Salim. I am actually from Indonesia, but I'm currently living and working in Estonia. And then I am, for my full-time job, I work as a growth analyst, but my side job, like Joel, I'm a psoriasis advocate, a chronic illness advocate. I am building the psoriasis organizations in Indonesia, my home country, and also working alongside Joel as an IFPA ambassador.
Brilliant. So you've done this so many times before, it just comes back. So like I say, we've talked about your psoriasis experience, and the question in my head is straight away saying, how does all that travel impact your condition? But I suppose we'll come on to that a little bit. So I suppose before we get into your personal experience, for anyone that doesn't know what transverse myelitis is, do you want to maybe explain that? And feel free to go in as much detail as you are I'm comfortable with, because I know it's not one that's come up before specifically on this show.
Okay. I'm going to read it just so I don't mess it up. Like the definitions in English, so it's not going to be confusing. So transverse myelitis is a neurological disorder caused by inflammation of the spinal cord, the part of the central nervous system that sends impulses from the brain to the nerves in the body. And the spinal cord also carries sensory information back to the brain. And in our nerves, cell fibers, there's actually something that causes it called myelin. And so in transverse myelitis, this myelin, the one that coats our nerve fibers, are the one that gets damaged. When the coat gets damaged, it cannot send signal properly from the brain to the body and reverse back from the body to the brain. So what happened is that our nerve function gets damaged. It's kind of like what we experience, what I've come to learn, is kind of similar with someone who gets a spinal cord injury, let's say. And so we can get paralyzed. It damaged our motor function, our sensory function. So I wasn't able to move at all. I wasn't able to feel anything. And that includes all of our organs too. It can damage our organs, since our organs also uses the nerve function. One of it is like being, one of the most common one is our bladder and bowel dysfunction. So The segment of the spinal cord at which the damage occurs determines which parts of the body are affected, because this, each segment of our spinal cord correlates to certain parts of our body. So the damage at one segment will affect the function at that level and below. So let's say the segment in our neck, the C1 until C5, I believe, if it gets damaged there, it will paralyze the person. It will damage the nerve of the person from the upper body, from the arm until the legs. So that determines in which part of our body gets affected by the transverse myelitis. And if you ask me about the causes, it really is varies and you can't exactly tell most of the time. So a lot of cases are considered idiopathic, but some of the cases has underlying conditions like multiple sclerosis or NMOSD, neuromyelitica optical disorder. And then it can also be from vaccines like flu vaccines and other kind of vaccines, bacterial infection. So even some people got it just after having a flu, and then suddenly it just goes haywire into a transverse myelitis. But yeah, it can also be the underlying causes from other autoimmune conditions like lupus, for example. So there are tests to help learn what are the underlying causes, but sometimes it's just considered idiopathic. But yeah, and I guess another fact is that 1/3 of the cases do not recover at all. 1/3 of the cases partially recover, and 1/3 of the other cases are able to fully recover. So it's kind of like a gamble. The medications that are available are just to reduce and get rid of the inflammation on the spinal cord, but it cannot guarantee or make the nerves functions to come back. It's just afterwards, it's just depending on your body to just recover and see how it goes.
Wow, I had no idea the odds were sort of that. That was that much of a lottery when we last spoke about this. So yeah, that really puts it in perspective, and maybe something we can circle back to ask about how that feels when you're in that moment. But see, guys, I told you she's a brilliant speaker, because you could have been a doctor. I'd have taken anything you prescribed in them sort of 5-10 minutes you're explaining that. I think I was so convinced. So thank you for sharing. It really gives me an understanding, because I know bits and pieces. I think where I used to get confused between the two conditions, because it's come up before in some stuff I've had been tested for in the past and that. And there's like, I don't know, it feels like as a layman, there's like a lot of crossover with MS, multiple sclerosis, and I didn't really understand the difference. So yeah, I really appreciate the explanation, and yeah, spoken like a true professional. Thank you. So I suppose, yeah, let's start unpicking a little bit about your experience with it. So when did you first encounter it, like right back to sort of first symptoms, I suppose?
The first time I encountered it was actually back when I was just 13 years old, back in high school, no, junior high school. So I was just I just finished my 7th grade, and it happened very fast, within a few hours. So I was on school holiday, thankfully, so I didn't need to skip school or anything. So I suddenly just had this very uncomfortable dull ache on my upper back that we thought at first it was just like, oh, I didn't sleep properly last night because my cousins had a sleepover. So we were just crammed in one bed because we didn't want to split our beds. But consecutively, progressively, after in a few hours, it just become like this burning, very painful pins and needles kind of pain in my upper back. And I was just trying to do anything to ease the pain. I was just laying down, asking help to do any massage, putting some kind of like lotions or anything to help to make it better. Ended up falling asleep for a bit because I was just exhausted from feeling all the pain. When I woke up, I couldn't move or feel anything from my belly button downwards. That was just in a few hours, like 2 hours. So within the 5 hours from the start of the dull ache to getting paralyzed, it was just 5 hours. So it was concluded as an acute transverse myelitis because it happened so fast. And
you can say that must have been absolutely terrifying.
Yeah,
such a short span.
It was crazy terrifying in the sense that I woke up and then I just couldn't feel anything or do anything. I couldn't move, like nothing happened. It kind of feels like the signals that I'm sending from to my brain, kind of like there's a block around it, so it's not being sent out, and nothing happened. When I try to move my legs, I ask my leg to move, but there's nothing happened. It's just there's some kind of like weird block around it. So yeah, we just rushed into the hospital. We couldn't exactly get any clear answer since it was also already late night. But one thing for sure, that I couldn't pee, so I couldn't urinate. And then it has been hours, right? It has been hours and I haven't urinated at all. So my tummy was bloated, it was very uncomfortable and everything. So before doing all of the tests, we ended up putting in some catheter to help me urinate, because it can get dangerous if the urine comes back to the kidney and everything, right? So the next day we did MRI, the first one with contrast and the second one without contrast, and both results were inconclusive, said by the doctor. So ended up doing a lumbar puncture, which was very scary. As like a 13-year-old, you're being told that they'll be poking a needle on your spinal cord to take out the liquid and everything. In Indonesia, to get the lumbar puncture for certain complex tests, we couldn't do it in Indonesia. So the test had to be sent away to UK, US, and Singapore.
Oh, wow.
So that took time. That needed time, right? But it was like, I'm here right now, paralyzed with no answers and everything. So we only had like the very simple results the next day. The doctor told my parents that maybe your child has transverse myelitis. The bacteria, this condition, we can get rid of it, but your daughter will not walk again. That was very heavy and very shocking and very confronting to my parents, right? It was just, he just told my parents that, yeah, we can get rid of the virus, the bacterial, whatever is causing this inflammation, but your daughter won't be able to walk again.
How do you, and the thing is as well, they're supposed to be your sort of rock and trying to support you. And imagine hearing that information. I don't know how much of a part of the conversation you were in that, but
I was not at all.
Yeah, that's probably not a bad thing on this occasion. Normally we would advocate for involving the patient, but on this occasion, probably not a bad thing.
Yeah. It was too much for a little girl to just suddenly be told that you will never walk again. So yeah, then my parents were just like trying to find second opinions and everything. So we flew to Singapore with me the next day. And I guess this is like highlighting one of the problems in healthcare access and the quality in Indonesia that is still lacking compared to other first world country. That we take one day, I did one MRI with contrast, and then the doctor can straight tell me what's wrong. And can straight tell me this is transverse myelitis, it's from the T2 to T3 segment of my spinal cord, and this is what's going to happen, what we're going to do for the treatments. And this is the treatment is just basically to reduce and get rid of the inflammation. And then afterwards, like there is like this thing called golden period. So the faster you recover, show signs of recovery, the better is your chance to recover in the long run. So it was like he explained to us about like the expectations, what we can, this is the kind of scenarios that could happen and everything. And at that time, after 4 days of high steroid injections, I was able to learn to stand back up again. So within 1 month, I was able to walk pretty much normally. I was able to go back to school when the school year started. And I was able to learn to control my pee again, because it's not just about being able to urinate, but it's also about being able to use muscles to your pelvic floor muscles and everything. So I could say that afterwards, I went back to 90% being a normal kid from the transverse myelitis. And from all the tests that we did, it all came back negative. So it concluded as idiopathic. And it being idiopathic, the chance for it to recur is very, very small. So none of us think about it being able to like, oh, happen again or anything. And then, yeah, until 9 years later.
Yeah, and we'll come on to that. I've got so many questions.
About, yes, yes.
Just like, all like, I was getting hung up on is like, as a parent, just thinking about how your parents would take that information. And because like, I imagine you're there and you've got this mixed emotion of fear and probably frustration trying to get your body to do things, but it doesn't. But obviously we're quite adaptable and resilient when we're younger. That's not so much the case when we're older. And just, oh, yeah, my head is swimming. So like, how did that, like, how did, obviously you had lots of restrictions there in terms of like your regional medical availability and delays and things like that. And I suppose in some respects you got quite lucky in that you got answers quite quickly and they obviously targeted it. But yeah, I suppose I want to know a little bit about more how you were feeling, just like, you know, you're laying there and you're paralyzed from that far down. And I don't know, what were sort of some of the things you were feeling back then, if you don't mind going back there to that place?
Actually, before this interview, I was asking myself that, like back then during the first occurrence, what was I feeling? I don't know if it was very traumatic to the point that nothing came up in my mind about like, what was I feeling? But at the same time, I think it was that I was overwhelmingly a very positive person, especially since 2008, since a few years back, I first got psoriasis. And so I had no other choice in order to be able to still live. That I have to look at this in a more positive mindset. And I think it helps also to have parents who always try to look at this also from the brighter perspective. So it was kind of like more towards like an upbeat, hopeful experience, I guess, because I was surrounded by so much support from my family, first and foremost. And then I think most things that I was feeling was more on, first, I was bored out of my mind because I couldn't do anything else. Like, I was chained to the bed all the time. I couldn't do anything on my own. And then the second one was the one that I remember most, was when you keep on taking out the catheter every week. When we took out the catheter every week, I was asked to try out pee on my own. But nothing happened. That moment was like the heaviest part, was just thinking that, oh my God, I'm a 13-year-old girl and I can't even pee on my own. I felt like it was more towards like shame. I felt very stupid. Like, this is something that I should be able to do, but I couldn't. But for us, as a kid, I couldn't fully comprehend that it's not actually my fault, that this is just a condition that that comes with it, right? Mm-hmm. So it was more towards, I felt more down moments from that process of not being able to urinate compared to the other stuff. Yeah,
and I think that's a really important point. And I think for anyone sort of listening to this, when sort of thinking about lived experience and what patients want, like from what we do in our advocacy work, because we tend to look at these experiences with our experienced or adult hats on, don't we? And think, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, oh, the most traumatic thing must have been your parents or the fact that you were paralyzed. But actually, as a 13-year-old girl, what mattered to you was the not being able to urinate and the catheter and everything else. So I think that's why it's really important that we ask these questions, to understand at them moments in time, what matters to that person, that they're part of their life journey.
Yeah. Oh, that actually reminded me that I wanted so bad to go back home from Singapore because my best friend was having a birthday party. At that moment, I was just like so desperate, like, I'll just go there with a wheelchair or anything. I'm just like, I want to go home and I want to see my friends. Like, I want to celebrate her birthday and everything. But I actually got there the day before. I couldn't make myself to go the next day because I was so embarrassed to just go blast in the restaurant where using a wheelchair with a catheter back. How am I supposed to do that, right? I was just like, no, this is like, though I can't do it. I was just filled with shame about like how I look. People would just keep staring at me, because I think not a more most memorable part was that I went to airport, but I had to sit in a wheelchair going up and down the plane. It was through the stairs instead of like the trunk, so I was carried up and down the stairs of the airplane, the steep one, on a wheelchair. Those kind of things are the one that it's just like, oh my God, I feel so much shame that people would just keep staring at me. Like, there's just like, what is wrong with this little girl and everything, right? And so, yeah, even when the school started, I actually still needed crutches. But I was so ashamed to wear crutches, even though all my friends know what I'm going through. But then I feel like I still feel that shameful feeling. Like, I don't want to be attracting attention because not everyone in the school knows. I will see as like this not capable kid and everything, right? So I actually ditched my crutches since the first day of school. My mom was just panicking, knowing that when my driver go back home and just like, why is the crutches here? I don't know, she's still wearing crutches. She's just like daring to go into the school, take all those stairs with her bags and everything with crutches on, without crutches. And I'm like, but I guess that in a good side, that shameful feeling pushes me to push for recovery, I guess.
And I say
But yeah.
it's just a really good it's worth exploring that how your perceptions change of different times of your sort of life journey, like I say, and your priorities. Because I know when I was a kid with my condition, I did some really stupid things because I was worried about appearances or that sort of thing that I would never do now. And I think that's why it's really important to involve people and their experiences of those times, because otherwise you have a load of adults in a room trying to decide how to care for people, and they're not sort of factoring in what matters to the person. So thank you for sharing that. Really, really do appreciate it. So I suppose, yeah, and then you carried on thinking, oh, okay, I've got psoriasis now, but that's the end of the whole transverse myelitis thing. Until, and I don't know how you're so positive, by the way. Kiara, guys, is like the most positive person I've ever met in person, through my advocacy, and I don't know how they do it. But yeah, so you, I suppose things carried on. You thought that was the last you'd seen of that until what happened?
Oh, I know, it happened all so suddenly out of nowhere. It was September 2021. And it started, rather than progressing it, having it progress through a day, I actually have it like in a week this time. So it was more towards like I started feeling soreness. I felt like it was more towards soreness on my upper back. So I was like thinking, oh, maybe I was working too much. It was pandemic era. We're just like sitting down at home in front of the laptops. That's all we do. We're not going out and everything. So maybe it's just like soreness. So I just have some massage and everything with a massage gun, trying to help to ease like the soreness, right? But then it kind of like progressive. Like I woke up one night at 2 a.m., as I remember, suddenly with a sudden sharp pain in my upper back. And so I also had psoriatic arthritis starting 2015, on my but particularly on my knees. And then I started biologic injections, so it was pretty much controlled. It only like started to I only had several symptoms, not yet a full-blown arthritis. So at that time, at that night, I was trying to like move my body and everything, stretch here, stretch there, and I felt better. So I was like thinking, I think this is one of the symptoms of arthritis, right? We were in a one positions for too long, but especially sleeping, so it gets really stiff and it becomes painful and uncomfortable. But when we move again, it gets better. So I was like thinking, what if I have a spondyloarthritis? Because my mom's older brother has ankylosing spondylitis. So it runs in the family, like ankylosing spondylitis, and I have psoriatic arthritis. What if this is the spondyloarthritis, right? So it lasted for quite a while, for like around 2 to 3 hours. I couldn't lay down because it was so painful. I was just trying to find a comfortable positions, and I ended up being able to sleep on my front, so I didn't lay down on my back after a few hours. And then the next morning, it just felt like nothing happened. So okay, that was weird. Then the next night it happened again, so I was just trying to find some doctors to see on to talk about if this is the possibility of the spondyloarthritis. I went to see one. I In the back of my mind, there was a questions if this is transverse myelitis, because maybe our subconscious mind is smarter than us. But also at the same time, we're just like, it's been 9 years, like, and the the chance for it to recur is very, very small. But I asked the doctor then, we did a lot of like x-rays and testing and stuff. It was just, I threw the questions at him that, do you think this is my arthritis spreading, or this is my transverse myelitis possibility coming back? At that time, he was just like, no, I think this is your arthritis. He gave me a lot of vitamins injections and everything. And then he said, like, afterwards, I think tomorrow for like a few days, you will feel a little bit numbness and uncomfortable feeling in your body. Because especially that the vitamins was a direct injections instead of tablets that I took. So the next day in the morning, it happened again. But this time it was really, really bad. It was like the burning sensations on my upper back, pins and needles, nothing helps. I was very, very desperate of some reliefs because it was just too painful moving, and anything that used to help a few days before, it didn't work at all. I don't have any painkillers on me anymore because I haven't had any arthritis pain for years. So it was all expired. But then I found one of my mom's painkiller and I just took it because I was just very desperate. But I took it on an empty stomach. So after a while, I just puked everything out, and my parents heard me puking out. They woke up, they came to my room. They were trying to help to find some other reliefs and everything. But after a few hours, they woke up after like 2 hours then when I puked, and then just in a short amount of time, when they were like trying to find other medications and everything, they went out of my room. I was squatting down, trying to hold in the pain. I was just like focusing on my breathing and everything. I started to feel the numbness. Like, I'm losing control of my lower body. I'm losing control of the sense that I have on my lower body. So I just lay down on the floor. I called my parents. They were just like, it's happening all over again. And this time it was even higher up. It was not just from my belly button, but it was from my diaphragm level. So it goes further up. And back then in 2012, when it first happened, I was told that you are lucky that the paralyzations didn't happen from to your upper body, because it also affects the organ. One of it is it can slow down the heart and the lungs, right? So it can be very life-threatening. So I was just like thinking there, laying down. I felt like the paralyzations, like, just slowly keep coming up. And I was just like, oh shit. is this going to happen until like my upper body? And is this it? Am I going to die at that time? Funnily enough, I was just like thinking, but if I'm going to die, you know, and my life is not flashing before my eyes. I was thinking about that. It was such a stupid moment. I was just like, but my life is not flashing before my eyes. So I was just trying to think about my life. See, recently.
Even in that moment, you're finding positives. That's just typical Kiara right there.
I know. I was just thinking about that. I was just like, oh, if I really do die now, will I regret about my life and everything? It was just at that moment, I think one of the profound realizations that this condition gave me was just like, no, I actually will not regret, even though there's a lot of things that maybe I haven't do. But up to that point, I've done everything that I can. I've given my best every day to just live a better life each day. So yeah, it happened. Thankfully, it didn't go further up to my lungs and everything. It stopped at my diaphragm level, and then it all happened again. But I thought at first that I knew what was going to happen, right? Because I've been here before. Yeah. I know what to do. We know what to do. We know what to expect. We know what the treatment that needs to be done. I know how the recovery was, right? Okay, 1 month, I can just walk back again, right? So I can do this. It's fine. Everything is good.
I'm not sure I'd be sitting there thinking it's fine when I'm paralyzed from like nearly the chest down. But I mean, that's the difference between our outlook. Okay.
It already happened. What else am I supposed to do? I'm just like, okay, we can do this. 1 month, we can walk back again. Just, but turns out it was just much more complex, much more complicated than the one in 2012. Yeah.
Yeah, and before we get onto the recovery bit and everything, just like the bits that really stick out to me is, one, I feel like it's really cruel that onset in a different way, you know, because in theory, like with an arthritis flare, or I can only talk about what I can relate it to, you know, you learn by experience and you're better for it. And the fact that it developed in a different way just feels really cruel that it didn't give you the opportunity to prepare more for what was coming. And then the other bit that I just cannot get my head around with your condition is that paralysis onset just seems so crazily quick. You know what I mean? Just the thought that you can feel it like away. Yeah. I just, that terror, I'm getting anxiety listening to the story, let alone living, you know, because I talk about, I reach a point in my pain where I talk about it being like my panic room and I feel trapped. I cannot imagine being in that place where you can feel paralysis coming on like that and not knowing where it stops. Like, could you talk a little bit more about that? Obviously, you're a very upbeat person, but that must be terrifying. I can't get my head around it. I can't.
It becomes a trauma now whenever I'm in an uncomfortable places, and let's say dentist. Mm-hmm. I had some work done in my teeth. They gave me like anesthesia, so it's just like half of my face was just numb. I was on the verge of panic for hours. Because I'm just like, this is a very familiar feeling that I had gone through, and it was a very terrifying condition. So when I was just there, it was just like it woke up subconsciously a lot of the feelings and the anxiety and all the bad memories that came with the transverse myelitis when I was first paralyzed. So I think it kind of like it again, I think because I'm a very upbeat person at that moment in time, it wasn't something that I thought about, but it definitely, the body keeps the score, right? So it's something that becomes a subconsciously a trauma whenever I'm in uncomfortable positions where I cannot move my body or like losing control. Like for example, getting a facial, it's painful and I couldn't move. Like it's just, I was just there, paralyzed there. So those kind of moments definitely brings up all of the traumatic feeling in my body that just like an impending panic that wants to come out. But I guess thankfully also that I have learned a lot of like self-awareness, self-compassion and everything, so I can talk to myself throughout that process in like processing the emotions real time so that I don't get panic. But it's still a very uncomfortable and a very draining experience every time to just relieve that trauma.
And it's really important you talk about that, because we haven't come up on the show quite a lot, and it's an experience I've had myself in that, like, you know, we're resilient and we learn from experience and everything else, but some of those traumas don't show their head until years down the line. It could be the most random thing that triggers it. And it's important for people to remember that these experiences, like, you know, your body might, you know, learn from that lesson and you see the signs of it. But I love that term, your body keeps score, like your mind keeps score, doesn't it, in that those experiences. Yeah, I never thought about what it must be like going to things like the dentist and that, where you actually do have to have those experiences induced almost.
So I had to do my other half of my teeth. I still haven't done it.
Yeah, I don't blame you at all. I don't think anyone could give you a hard time for that, Chiara, given what you've been through. So yeah, that all sounds terrifying, even though you tell it in a very sort of like rational sort of like, I'm going to work through this kind of way. But obviously we're getting the impression there that it wasn't so straightforward and it didn't take a few days or weeks to overcome. So what was the next step? Because clearly you knew what you were dealing with by that point, and it kind of answered all those other questions you had about potential other causes. So what did those next sort of few days and weeks look like?
So I went into the hospital knowing that this is transverse myelitis, but need further confirmation from the MRI. And at this time around, but I was still had that pain in my upper back constantly. So I was just begging my parents to just like, okay, you know, just take me to any hospital before we find any good doctors. Because I'm like, I'm desperate for some real painkillers, because I was just... It really exhausts you to just always be in constant pain, right? I'm sure you really relate to that. So it was just like, it's more towards like frustration of like, I want to get out of this painful feeling, to just like, let's get this over with. Let's get the show on the road, you know, let's get to the hospital. But yeah, it took some time to figure out which doctor to see and everything at this time around. And then when I went in, I was just begging them to just like give me the shot of the painkiller. Then the nurse was like asking, it can be pretty painful if I shoot it straight to you instead of like using an IV. You know, just like, I don't care. I need it right now. Just like, I'll bear through the pain of burning sensation when you inject it to me. Then, yeah, we had an MRI, but that was another traumatic experience because I had to do the whole spine plus my cervical. So it was 2 hours total for the MRI, being in that little machine there. It was still COVID, so I firstly wear masks. So it was very suffocating.
Anyone that hasn't done an MRI with a mask on will not appreciate how claustrophobic that is. It's horrible.
Even without masks, it's already horrible. And with masks on, it was just like, it's so much worse. It was just like, my body was still in a very uncomfortable feeling. I just had to be there. It was certain parts of my body, because the room is very cold, but the machine is actually very hot and very loud. So certain parts of my body was just feeling very hot and sweating all around, with my throat being very dry. And the sound of the machine, even though we had earplugs on, it was just so loud. So it was just, it became up to now, they're still one of my most traumatic experience too, to feel that, to be trapped in that space. I was just keep telling, like, trying to tone down my anxiety and my panic by like, okay, it's okay, let's just count to 10, let's just sing what song and everything, just like to get through like minutes by minutes without fully focusing on what's going on. But that was 2 hours still without contrast first. There was like a miscommunications that happened. I was like, we agreed to do contrast straight, like why? Like, I'm not going there for another 2 hours because of this, you know. It's like, it was just like, it was very traumatic. It was very suffocating. I went out, I asked to, because there was a bell that we can ask to be pulled out, right? So I asked, I was trying to postpone punching the bell. But at the end, I think like halfway through or something, I begged them, I was just like, can I take off my mask? Because it's really bad. Like, this is very, very uncomfortable and very heavy. And afterwards, after all of it is done, I was just like drenched in sweat. I was very tired and everything. I was like kind of like delirious because I was just like in a very weird mental space for like 2 hours. And then they were like asking me, so are you good to go for another round to do with contrast? And I was just like, no, I'm not. It was also late night. I was just like, no, I can't do this anymore. So the nurse was just like, okay, let's take a break, right, and do this tomorrow. But the issue with it is that I would be in a different position. So there could be a chance of like not being able to align the non-contrast with the contrast version of the MRI. So there was a risk that of course I'm willing to take. I'm just like, just get me out of here. So the next day when the doctor came and then like talked to me about like doing the MRI with a contrast, I was so very surprised of when I suddenly just bawled my eyes out, because I think before my mind really processed of what I was feeling, my body was already feeling everything. And then the mention of doing another MRI was just like too much. All this while, I always been someone that's just like, okay, if this is a medical procedure that I had to do, then I'll do it. It's not something that I always like, I think about it so much or I'm afraid of. But at that moment, that's why I was so very surprised. I was just like, I suddenly bawled my eyes out. I was just like, I can't do that. And then so we were trying to find ways, like my parents were trying to find ways to not have done it. Like, is there, like, let's see how the non-contrast results are and everything. But since we already know that it was transverse myelitis, most likely. So I was already started the high dose steroid, and I had doubled the dose of what I had back in 2012. But at the end, I still needed to do the MRI to be able to make sure where the lesions are, where the scars and the damage are in my spinal cord. So
presumably that would give you a bit of an idea of what you're going to be left with and everything
else. So we compromise. We're not going to do the whole spine and everything. We're just going to do a certain section of the upper back, since we know that I had the paralyzations came from the diaphragm downward. So it's kind of like a rough idea of where it is. It's just to be safe to check if there are other lesions in other parts of my spinal cord. and what actually was needed also is the brain MRI, because like if it's MS, the underlying condition, MS actually has the lesions of the myelin lesions also in the brain. And so yeah, we negotiated. I agreed on just doing the upper back of my spinal cord, and I'll take anxiety meds, so I'll sleep, or like at least I'll be hazy, so I wouldn't be fully focused or awake on for the process. So I did that, done and dusted. I also did the lumbar puncture again. This time I think one of the good part was the fact that I was paralyzed until my diaphragm, so I couldn't really feel when
yeah.
they do.
I've had one of those, and I've never sweat so much in my life. It was a horrific experience. I absolutely hated
yeah.
it. And trying to get yeah. somebody with arthritis to bring their knees up that high is just physically impossible. And in the back of your mind, you're just thinking, you are putting a needle between my vertebrae. I'm terrified. Yeah, it's horrible.
Yes. I had 9 poke until the liquid came out. Yeah. Oh.
Yes, but, it makes my skin yeah. crawl reliving that.
And yeah, oh God. But okay, that was done. I started doing the steroid injections, the steroid dose, 1,000 milligram a day, which was a lot. And in the next day, my left thumb actually started to be able to move. Okay. So there was progress. But only my left leg, my right leg, didn't show any signs of recovery yet. And after like 4 days of that high dose steroid, there's nothing further showing signs of recovery. So that was really, really bad. Like, I mean, comparing to the previously 4 days, I was able to already stand up. So this was like a really big difference. And then I couldn't keep on taking this much of high dose steroid. And then in the hospital that I was on, the professor insisted to just skip all the other treatments and try stem cell instead. But again, I live in a third world country, so everything comes out of our pockets or company insurance. And stem cell is like more towards research, so it's not covered at all. So it's something that we need to pay out of our own pocket, and stem cell is very, very expensive, and it's still on research. It's not like an official medication treatment for transverse myelitis yet. So there was like a lot of gamble, and the professor was just talking to me like, you know, you're still young, you still have your brain that you can live on and do things, you know, you can still live your life, because you don't, like, he's just basically telling me that it's okay if I'm not going to be able to walk and move again, because I still have my brain, I can still do things. It was like,
what a horrible way of, yeah. I know they've got to have that conversation and grease those wheels at some point, but you know, you've got to also give hope.
Yeah, it was just like straight up, like keep telling me, I was just like, are you trying to tell me that I should start accepting that I'm not going to walk again? Because he keeps mentioning like, you know, you're still young, you're smart, you still have your brain. What's that supposed to mean? But yeah, I ended up moving hospital to do another treatment. It's called immunoglobulin, IVIG. So there are 3 types of treatments for transverse myelitis: the steroid, IVIG, and plasmapheresis. And the plasmapheresis machine in Jakarta, I think there's only 3 of them, and it's being rotated between hospitals. So it's not just something that you can get out of any hospitals or what, but IVIG is something that you give through IV. And thank God it's after the Delta wave of COVID, because this medication was actually part that save lives people from the Delta COVID. So at that time the medication was available. We did that. Still after 4 days, there's no progression on my left and on my right leg. So it was I think the longer it goes on, it was like the bigger the uncertainty that I had to face, that we had to face, specifically me and my dad, because it was still COVID. So only my dad, one person can stay with me in the hospital. So me and my dad shared a lot of like heart to heart emotional moments of like, you know, there's like this unspoken possibility of like, there's no one that can guarantee what kind of recovery journey that I can be on, if my right leg would be able to progress or what. Like I said earlier, there's like this golden period of like, you have to be able to, the better it is for you to recover as much as possible in the beginning of the journey, so you can have a bigger chance of fully recovering. So at that moment, it was just like a big question of like, what's going to happen next? At the fifth day of my IVIG, the last day, there was a small movement from my right leg, but it was still nothing compared to my left leg. So the question was like to continue doing the treatment, like finding ways to get to the plasmapheresis, the other options, the last options, or to just wait and see, because nerve recovery also really takes time. It's not something you can rush. It's even slower than growing a hair, apparently, like rebuilding the cell nerves. So at that point, my dad was like putting it up to me, but I was just like, no, I can't do this anymore. I just want to go home. So at that point, I was just like, let's just go home and wait, because plasmapheresis is even like something, you need to put a tube here in your neck and everything. Like, it's like taking your blood out, putting another liquid inside your body and everything. I was just like, I don't think I have the capacity or mental space to bear through that, especially after like the 2 weeks long of being in the hospital, facing the uncertainty and everything. And it's not just the uncertainty, but we just like, I can't even move my body from on the bed, right? I can't even move to the side. If my leg is hitting something like on an uncomfortable positions, I can't even like stand, like sit down to move my own leg, because I was paralyzed from the diaphragm downwards. So I couldn't sit down. Sitting down, I can't even cough or sneeze. I cannot eat while sitting down, because that means like when you eat and sitting down, you need your abdomen to breathe, but I don't have any muscles working in my abdomen. So there was just like a lot of restrictions, a lot of still a lot of pain. And then there's this thing called MS hack when my abdomen was felt like it was very tight and feel very uncomfortable. It's like wearing a very tight pants all the time. So it's just like I just wanted to go home and be home. And then afterwards, it was just like trying to see how it goes, literally like starting physiotherapy at home every day and do as much as we can, like stimulate the muscles, no more medication, just vitamins. And then just a lot of physiotherapy and praying and hoping how much I can achieve. It really took a while, like the progress, I feel it like months, like weeks by weeks, every few weeks rather than like days or like within 1 week. So I think that the hardest part through the recovery was just like feeling all the other symptoms that I didn't feel before in the first attack, and now needing to deal with that, discovering what are these symptoms, how am I dealing with it, and if it will ever go away or this is something that I have to live my life with. It was just really dependent on people. I just want to take a shower, I just want to take something and everything. It was just like really needing, asking people to help on every single thing. And it was just like really surrounded by, I think, a lot of impending darkness that I was really at one point on the verge of just falling over. And I really feel like I was standing on the edge of the cliff, that if I really allow myself to feel, I will fall really deep and then I can get back up. So I was just like really trying to hold myself at the edge there and try not to fall. So yeah, I'm so sorry if this is taking so long.
No, it's not. And I was going to say, if you need a break, then please do, because I appreciate how emotional this is. And I don't know if maybe because we're friends or we know each other, I'm finding this so hard. So guys, if anyone's watching this live, I know this won't apply if you listen back on the podcast, but I'll try and do something similar in the podcast notes. If anything we're talking about here has affected you or is impacting and you need signpost and support, guys, then please do get in touch. Because yeah, this is it's so real, and you tell it so beautifully. And I think what really proper hit me and like gut punched me is like you've talked about being so positive and your outlook on it and that sort of upbeat approach. And then when we get into the experience, you start to sort of like, we're never going to, you know, fully relate or understand everything you went to, but you start to see the real impact and the lasting impact it had. And I can't even like imagine what it must be like to be paralyzed, let alone be paralyzed, but also have to process being in pain like that. That's, you know, as someone who's dealt with neurological pain, I know how much that can twist your head. I can't imagine what it could be like in that situation. And to do all of that through COVID and having limited access to people and all the stuff that any of us with autoimmune conditions went through during COVID anyway. That's just, yeah, it's so rough. And I was sort of following bits of this on your social media at the time, but I probably, like, I'm having this massive wave of guilt now that I probably didn't fully appreciate just how difficult that was. And for you to come out the other side and be as amazing as you are and such a great advocate and wanting to share this sort of thing, I think it just says so much about you. And thankfully, that brain of yours that doctor maybe a little bit insensitively mentioned is still very, very much valued. So I'm trying to lift you a little bit. That's hard. I appreciate it's very hard for you to share that.
Yeah, the craziest part that I know I think about is, like, once I went back, came off from the hospital, it was like around the beginning of October. 29th of October is World Psoriasis Day, and I was building this platform. I was actually starting to just build the team around it. And I still had the energy to go on meetings and, like, try to came up with some campaigns on social media for World Psoriasis Day. And we did this really beautiful campaign of from a song of a local singer. It's translated to we are strong people, like kita manusia kuat, we are strong people. So a lot of them just, like, created reels around it, sharing their journey. And it was just, like, I think one of the thing that kept me going, in a sense that I have this community, even though it's a different disease, but these people, like, needs me, and I'm doing some, and I'm still needed here to be able to do something to help other people. And that was something also, the conversations around it that I had with my dad in the hospital, that it's just like, there's something, there's a purpose behind this what I'm going through right now. And maybe this is something that can lead us to be able to contribute back to the society even bigger, and be like, reach out to other TM patients. I like to call trans personalities TM, is like the short version of it, TM patients, and be able to, like, give them hope, even though we cannot give them the certainty of recovery because everyone is different, but maybe, like, give them hope, because, you know, we know what it is to go through this, and we know how it is, how it feels like to not have the kind of information or, like, something that can explain all the different symptoms, because it's a lot of things that you never even thought of in the way your nerves really functions in your body, and how the little things your nerve functions in your body. But yeah, I also have to give a lot of it to my parents.
Yeah, they're amazing. They're amazing people. But you know, and you're a product of them as well. And then I think it just shows what an awesome family unit you guys are. And it's like, I know, like, your other family members that I follow on social media, yours, you're all doing amazingly inspirational things. And I'm just sorry you had to go through that experience for you to sort of find that voice. But yeah. I think I just really want to emphasize how important what you're doing is, and to have the energy, because it is draining. You know, the viewers won't know this, but, you know, before we joined off air, I was sort of telling you I have been sort of burnt out the last couple of weeks since Singapore. And that's me talking about my skin and my joints aching a bit. It's not me talking about going through being paralyzed and not knowing if I was going to be able to walk again and these sort of things. And it's absolutely exhausting, and people don't realize how much yourself you can give in sharing this. So one, on behalf of everyone, I'm so grateful that you do. Just remember to take care of yourself. And I promise you, I will try and share this and little snippets of this conversation as far and wide as I can, so that you can reach those people you try to reach and raise awareness, like you do anyway, so brilliantly on your own platforms. But I feel like I've got a duty now to try and get your story out there as well, to just try and if there's some sort of shining light at the end of that, you know, terrible, traumatic, there's no other way. I can't find any nicer words for it. You know, it's hell, you know, what you went through. Yeah. And for you to come out to be so positive, I suppose I've got lots of questions, but I'm conscious of your time and more importantly, your energy having to share this. I suppose the last thing I wanted to ask, you know, maybe we do a part two when I ask all the sort of finer points, but what is, like, outlook? Do you still live, like, every day, like, worrying that that's going to happen again? And also, I suppose, how does that fit with living with something like psoriatic arthritis, where you are going to feel pains and things like that? Like, how do you process that and the outlook of that condition or that sort of repeat event, I suppose?
Do I still live with the fear of it recurring back. Yeah, somewhat. Yeah, there is. It is in the back of my mind in a way that, because this time around the test, one of it's leading towards like I might have lupus, and this is the thing that is causing my TM for the second time. It's not a full official diagnostic yet, but the test is showing in that direction. So it's kind of like now it hits a little bit, not a little bit. It hits much, much harder this time around of having the TM, that this is something that I will leave as a part of me in the for the rest of my life, because and even until now, it's after like almost 2 years now, I'm still trying to fight for recovery. I'm still like only 70% recovered, I would say. I still live with limitations. Thankfully, I can live my life now. I think the crazy decisions was moving my life from Indonesia to Estonia to chase my dreams after being able to, yeah, to be able. I was just like, that was like one of the promise that I made when I was paralyzed in the beginning. I was just like, if I'm able to recover from this and live independently again, I want to chase the one thing that. One of the biggest things that I really want in my life, which was like to try and live in Europe. And I did that. The opportunity came to me. I kind of felt like it was like a gift from life itself after going through that. I could barely walk long distances when the opportunity came and when I moved here. So it was just like I think I was crazy. But really like I want this so bad. I want this really bad to be able to go to Europe, and it's not something that and it's not an opportunity that can come like twice or thrice, right? It's a very rare opportunity to get a job that wants to pay for your visa and your relocations and everything. So I just took the leap of faith, and the fear has always been there, the fear of like how am I going to live abroad alone if anything happens to me and everything. But I think I've grown the confidence of knowing that I am capable of going through whatever life throws at me. It's something that is like it's not easy, but I know I'm capable. So and I embrace kind of like I learned to embrace whatever life is, the good and bad. I think it's just part of life. It's something that if I have to go through that, then let's get through that. And definitely a lot of down moments too, in a sense that a lot of grieving of the kind of things that I lost, the kind of things that I still cannot do, the kind of limitation that I still need to live with. But I think the point that I've come to learn is I really prioritize living and enjoying life now, like how much precious it is to be able to just walk. Now every time I can just like go on a hike or like trekking or just be on the seaside looking at the oceans, which has always been like a really big thing to me. It was just like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. 2 years ago I could barely walk around my house, and now I'm here like living on my own, walking long distances and everything. So it's just like, isn't this proof of the fact that we can how resilient our body is, how resilient we can be within our mind. And if we choose to keep on fighting and to make things work, there is always a way. And the fact that I think above it all, life is still so good. There's this quote from a TM patient, like a little kid. His name is Dylan in US. He said to his mom once that it was just like, aren't I one of the unlucky, lucky ones? I think it's a perfect balance of like acknowledging that, yeah, getting sick is something unfair, something unlucky. But above it all, we're still very lucky that I can still have access to medications. I can still have access. I can still have a lot of good support system and everything. So it's just like a balance of both worlds. And I guess, choose to just take it one day at a time and make the most out of it, because. Man, I can walk now. Yeah.
Just phenomenal outlook, phenomenal human being, amazing friend, and someone I've very much needed over the last year. And I can't help but think, I'm sitting here listening to you, and I can't help but think when I'm still doing this to 20 people in 10 years' time, we're going to be sitting here with the trajectory you're on. So, do you remember when we had that Kiara on, and now I know she's X, Y, and Z, like completely unreachable, and you know, forgotten all about me. And,
oh, you know what I mean? It's just like
I can't help just like I say the trajectory you're on to do what you've done to move to Europe at your age when you were still recovering after everything you went through. I think if that doesn't tell people who you are, and you know. That them employers that brought you over, they clearly know the special person that they've got as well. I'm really conscious of the energy you've put in for this and the time and everything. So before I let you go, and we never see you again because you're far too big of a deal for us. do you want to just let people know where they can find you? I will share it in the video and the podcast show notes, but I'm just let people know where they can find you online.
Okay, I'm mainly on Instagram. It's called Lionel, so C-H-I-C-H-I Lionel. And also if you want to learn more on transverse myelitis and everything about the more information about it, we do have an Instagram account for it at transversemyelitis.id, and for psoriasis it's at psoriasis_id, but for psoriasis it's mainly focusing in Bahasa Indonesia because that is our main focus for the community. But yeah, I guess if anyone is also going through transverse myelitis or MS or anything, feel free to just reach out, because it's, I know it's heavy, and it's it really helps to find, to help to have someone that has been through it also, even though I cannot give you the certainty or anything, but it's just like it helps to ease the burden that to answer some questions, so to have someone to relate to in a way. So yeah.
That's really kind of you, and like I said earlier on in the show, just yeah, keep looking after you as well, because you're a special person. But we need to make sure that, you know, we give a lot, don't we, where we share our stories, and we do it happily. But yeah, just make sure you're looking after you as well, amongst all that you're doing for the great amazing yeah. things for other people. So Chiara, thank you so much for joining us. It's been amazing. I knew it would anyway. But yeah, I feel really emotional after this. So like I said, guys, if anyone else feels like they need a bit of support or whatever, get in touch, and we'll happily signpost you. But from all of us here, Chiara, and the lovely community here that have been putting all sorts of lovely comments in chat, thank you so much for joining us, and enjoy what's left of your weekend.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure. All the best for all the great work that you're doing. I really look forward to
it. And I'll say the door is always open if you want to come back, okay? But hopefully for positive reasons. I don't want to hear about any more episodes or flares or positive reasons.
Yes, please. Yes, please.
Right, enjoy the rest of your day. See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you, everyone.